It's time for Toronto's Top Line.
Why don't they have like a geek squad for IKEA? Have the people come over and do it all.
That's exactly what they should do.
$100 flat rate fee, come and put it together.
Oh, I'd pay $100 cash in a heartbeat.
I'd pay $2,000.
$2,000 cash.
I would pay $2,000 cash for a guy to put together a $40 chair.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN Go app. Brian Hayes and Craig Button in here today. The O-Dog is in Ottawa on assignment, as he may say, ahead of Game 6 tonight. And Noodles is off again. This doesn't happen very often, man. Noodles is, he can grind. Noodles works. He is a worker.
If he's off, you know that like he's unable to work.
Something came up.
Yeah.
You know that it was unavoidable because Noodles will grind. He'll make his way in, but he's not in here today. The O-Dog should be back tomorrow, but who knows? And Pittsburgh looking to close the series out tonight. And if they do that, they'll meet Nashville in the Cup final. Ray Ferraro will join us here in a moment. Ray's back in Vancouver after spending the past month in Europe. The Worlds are over. Sweden get past Canada in a shootout. I mean, everyone hates the shootout in a situation like that, but you also recognize that's the way the tournament's always been played. You try to score in the 20-minute overtime. If you can, it goes to shootout. That's the way it works.
Two things. Can I say two things real quick?
Mm-hmm.
Two things. Number one is that, you know, Jonathan Toews won the shootout in the World Junior Tournament. He celebrated as one of the great moments, Carey Price and everything, right? So if you're on the wrong side of it, you hate it, and if you win it, you celebrate it,
exactly.
Right? And number two, after the World Junior Championship this year, I was in the Toronto airport, and I run into some people and parents and kids. You start talking to the kids. If you're born after 1998, I'm going to say, maybe 1999, you don't know the game without a shootout, the NHL game or the international game. They don't want it. Like, so what's going to happen in 20 years? The shootout is an accepted practice.
It's a good point. Yeah, the people that complain about it are the pre-cap era folks like you.
Absolutely.
And I who remember the way the game used to be played or what have you. And that's like soccer, man. Like, I don't get the impression like soccer fans complain all that much about the shootout because it's just a part of the program.
That's right.
It's always been there. You try to score in regulation. If you can't, it goes to extra time. If it doesn't happen, you go to a shootout. World Cups get handed out in shootouts. World Cups.
The biggest.
Biggest tournament in the world.
World.
Of any sport.
Yep.
In terms of popularity, in terms of viewership. Nothing compares. Guys are sitting there on the line trying to score in a shootout. So, hate on it all you want, but you're right. I mean, there's a new generation that's coming.
Yep.
And this is what they know. And that's just the way it's going to work. Now, I don't think it's ever going to come to the NHL playoffs. I don't ever expect that to happen,
no.
Nor should I expect it, nor do I want it to happen. And I think the younger generation, who also gets the ability to see the NHL playoffs play out the way they want or the way that they currently are, would want that to stay intact. Don't change a good thing.
Well, they know that too, right?
They know that.
That's something they know.
But the regular season, you're right. They've been doing this for, what, 11 years or whatever it is. We're pretty deep into this.
Yeah, we are.
Yet the hatred for the shootout, I find, has grown over the years. People become more and more crusty about it. And I don't know why you can't just accept.
I think it's the people before the shootout that become more and more crusty.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Because I don't think it's the younger, when I say the younger, if you're born after 1997, 98, you don't know the game without a shootout.
Well, I still haven't come across an argument for a better system if you actually want a winner for every single game. And that's where my stance, that's where I bat, that's where I lead off, is I want to walk out of a rink knowing that a team won and a team lost. I want a final emotion. So that's why I'm okay with the shootout. Is it perfect? Of course not. Would I prefer that it ended in overtime or regulation? Absolutely. 100 times out of 100. But I do not like ties. I don't want ties. I don't pay for ties. I don't want to walk out of that rink saying, what the hell was that? I want a final emotion. And no one has come up with a better idea that's realistic than a shootout.
I remember, Brian, like, you know, leading into it, I was like, oh, geez, I'm not too big on this. I still remember my first shootout, and it was down in Florida. And my first one was in Florida. My second one was in Vancouver. And it was the second one in Vancouver, and I went down to ice level, or as close to ice level as I could, to watch a shootout. I remember looking around, and everybody was standing up. Everybody was in the building excited, and I said, okay, I think that I'm going to have to change my view on this a little bit.
I think it's a lot like fighting, where publicly people say, I hate it, I'm against it, I don't want to see it. And then when it actually happens, they can't turn it off.
Yeah.
We had Jonas Siegel in here, and Jonas pops in a lot. And Jonas and I, we see eye to eye, I'd say 50% of the time. The other 50%, we vehemently disagree with each other. And Jonas was trying to make the case, one that I didn't believe for a second when he was making it, that he actually doesn't watch the shootout. He'll watch 60 minutes of regulation, 5 minutes of three-on-three, and then he turns it off, which I don't believe for a second. And I think it's the same thing when it comes to fights. People that are anti-fighting, and I'm not disputing that you're anti-fighting, but I don't believe that you turn it off when it happens. I don't believe that you don't stand up or you're engaged to an extent when it happens when you're actually in the rink, because it's very captivating, very exciting. A fight, it's very energizing. Even if you're against it, you can admit that, yeah, when it's happening, you know what, this is pretty wild in this rink right now.
Wouldn't we all agree that we're all anti-accident on the roads?
Yes.
There's nobody that's pro-accident.
Nobody
on the roads, right?
Is. Yeah.
Everybody's anti-accident, right?
There's no protesters out there saying, give me more accidents, right? Please.
But everybody slows down to see the accident, don't they?
Yeah.
They might not like it. They don't support it. They don't want them. But everybody slows down.
What's going on over there? Exactly.
The rubberneckers, right?
Yeah,
so totally. I agree with you, Brian.
Totally. I think a lot of people, they want to portray this idea that they're against it 100% of the time, and I don't believe it.
Yeah.
I don't believe it. When fights happen or when shootouts happen, even if you don't like the principle of it, it is thoroughly entertaining. And guess what? The same thing applied with Sweden, Canada. Now, it was too bad Canada never really got going, and it felt like it was done 2-3 shooters in. Now, it was interesting that the two Leafs, Nylander and Marner, both missed, considering the season the Leafs just had was shootouts, where they were abysmal. And there's a counter-argument there. We were talking about this in the break. They got a lot of loser points this year, but they could have actually had a lot more points if they actually won like 4 or 5 shootouts.
Exactly.
Because they were so bad. And who knows? How can you predict what it's going to do in the future? Will they get better next year? I have no idea.
Well, and then you got to be good enough in regulation to have the game close, to get an opportunity for an extra point, or, well, I shouldn't say an extra point, for the winner points or the loser points, right? You gotta be close in the games.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is a good step for the Leafs.
Well, and that's what was proven pretty early into the season for me, that they're going to hum along here and be in it. You know, it got to a point where by late November, early December, I remember saying on this show that my ceiling in terms of expectation had been elevated to them actually making the playoffs. Like, that was the big difference for me this year for the Leafs. Like, that is what changed once they actually got going and we got to see them and see them conform and see what they were as a team. Going into the season, I thought the ceiling was 85, 87 points. You know, lots of improvement. Rookies play well. Freddie Anderson stabilizes the position in net, but they don't make the playoffs. Where the floor was still, hey, they could be a bottom three or bottom four team. Why couldn't they be? They were dead last a year ago. But as the season went on, 25, 30 games in, I'm like, okay, they're not finishing bottom three or bottom four. And I do think it's reasonable to expect that they make the playoffs. And that's exactly what ended up happening. And it's been an interesting progression for Leaf fans in terms of just their viewing habits and in following players. Like, look at Nylander and Marner. Nylander wins the MVP of the World Hockey Championships. Marner is voted as a top three Canadian, and the best of the bunch is sitting in Scottsdale, Arizona, which is wild. But now you get the Memorial Cup on
and
this year.
And he was
year.
Terrific at the World Cup.
At the World Cup, he was terrific. And think about what he would have done at the World Hockey Championships. I mean, he would have been a magician over there, I would think, Matthews. But last year it was still the Memorial Cup, and watching the American Hockey League playoffs, and what can Nylander do? What can Marner do? Now it's moved at such a rapid pace to what you're expecting out of these guys and what they're actually achieving. Ray was over there covering the World Hockey Championships for TSN. He obviously was calling the gold medal game on Sunday in the building, watching Nylander versus Marner, Canada versus Sweden. Let's bring him in here. What's happening, buddy?
I'm a little upside down time-wise. You know, Craig goes over to Europe quite a bit. You know what that's like, the first day back. But I also made a slight faux pas that, you know, when you agree to something when you're rested and you go, hey, I can do that. That sounds fine. I got a call a couple weeks ago. Hey, we need you to come in and tape some more stuff for that EA gig that I have where I do the voiceovers. So I'm like, yeah, I'll just do it the day I come back from Europe. Well, that was fun. That was 6 hours today. I was in the sound studio. Should have been four, but I was making mincemeat out of everything. And so now I'm talking to you guys. But you're missing two of the knuckleheads, so it's, you know, just you and Craig.
Right. This is more enticing for you, I would think.
Yes. I mean, you know, the two of them, I mean, the nonsense factor goes way down.
Well, it's such a good point, though. When you make plans in the future that at the time you're like, yeah, whatever. That was like us with the 10K. 3 months ago, we're like, yeah, fine, sign me up for a 10K. That's nothing. And then all of a sudden, you're at the starting line at 7:30 in the morning, and you're going to have a heart attack.
You're like, what an idiot am I?
How stupid is that?
What am I thinking?
Yeah, no kidding.
Did you guys do it?
Yeah, we did it. Owen and I did it. Noodles couldn't because of his wonky back.
Okay, so you and Owen did it.
Yeah, we actually did it.
What were the times?
Horrible. Absolutely embarrassing.
Well, I'd like to hear the actual times.
I was at, I think I was at an hour and 21 minutes.
Wow, those are 8-minute Ks.
Yeah, there was some walking.
Did you run or walk?
A combination and more of the former. I mean, there was a lot of walking, believe me. And
what was O-Dog, the worst time?
O was like 5 minutes past me, which I was actually surprised. I kind of, because I left him in my dust around 4K. Which, and I say that lightly, because there was no dust. I mean, it was like the Roadrunner was running away here. I was barely moving, and he was stopped.
There was no dust.
No, there was no dust. And at 4K, I had finally said, dude, I got to move here. Like, I was kind of getting some competitive juices going, and he had no interest. He was giving me the wave off at, like, 2K. He was like, get out of here. So
do
I took off.
To
yeah, exactly. I took off, and I'm thinking, I'm going to beat this guy by 45 minutes. And I barely got across the line, and he came humming. So I guess maybe he picked up his pace. But it was pretty embarrassing. And then further to your point, literally 5 minutes after we finished the race, O goes, oh, we'll do this again next year for sure. So now we're committed to the 10K again next year. And how much training do you think is going to happen over the next 350 days?
Well, none.
None.
And which will be exactly what happened this year.
Yep. Precisely.
But here's the crazy part is that it always, always, always seems like a decent idea. And you just go, yeah, but you just finished. You know how stupid it is.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, yeah, we'll do it again.
Yeah.
Because you're fresh. Now you're like, yeah, I can do this.
Well, now it's done, right? It's done. Huh. So, of course, we'll talk the biggest. I would have, you know, confirmed a marathon in a year after I actually got past the finish line. But we're not going to do it. I can't imagine we'll do it next year.
Oh, hopefully it gets sponsored again, and you have to.
Well, that's true. Sometimes work gets in the way of it, and you actually have to commit. We were talking about the World Hockey Championships and Nylander and Marner, and Craig had a big comment in the previous hour because we've been talking about Nylander and his availability, and I think you guys actually were on the same page when we had that conversation a few months ago, the idea of Nylander's future with the Leafs and, you know, what it would take to pry him off the Leafs' hands and what kind of a piece would have to come back. And Craig, what did you say about him in the previous hour?
I just said, like, you know, I thought about top pair defenseman if you were going to trade him for. But to me, he looks like all of being an elite stud player. So if you're going to get a defenseman back, you better get a player. I said Shanahan Pronger type deal if you're trading him. That you know, that's how good. And it was more. It was. I mean, the World Championships were great, Ray. But it was more the series against Washington that I think it was really like, wow.
Well, you know what? You know what it's been for me, Craig, is, I mean, his skill's always been undeniable. If you got eyes, you can see that. Man, look how skilled he is. But he competes in a way that I think you have to watch him more to understand that he's actually competing. Because he's so smooth and so silky. He's not going to compete for a puck the way Hyman competes for one. Because Hyman has to basically throw his heart and soul, and I say this respectfully because he knows that that's what he is, he has to throw his heart and soul into every puck battle. And Nylander goes to it and goes, well, I can get it this way. and he gets it back. Now he's got the puck again. I don't know that I thought he was going to be that good at that. There's an old thing they used to say about the Oilers, and they said if Sather told those guys to run through a wall, Messier would try to run through the wall. And Coffey would skate right up to the wall and go, I'm not going to skate up to the wall, or I'm not going to go through the wall. I'm just going to skate over here and figure out another way. And Gretzky would look at it and figure out the best way of going over it or around it or whatever. Like, there's a different way to attack every problem. And Nylander, I think, has impressed me with he can attack a problem on the ice differently than I thought he was going to be able to. But I, you know, we link them pretty quickly because that's, of course, what we do, whether there's any basis for it or not. But we link them to Anaheim right away because Anaheim's got all kinds of defensemen. But, I mean, Montour's a nice player, but that's not a deal. Vatanen's a nice player, but that's not a deal. Like, Lindholm's a player. I don't even think that's a deal. So I'm now getting, like, I'm with you, Craig, with what you're saying. The quality of the player that you're even considering would be far greater than it was months ago. And I've been more than impressed, I've been surprised. I've been pleasantly surprised with how good he's got as quickly as he's got. It's really something. The Leafs are just, they're in a great spot because they are going to have to make some decisions here relatively quickly. Now, you know, Babcock said Nylander won't be a centerman, but if he becomes a centerman, then they're going to move somebody. And then if they move Nylander off the wing, that means they got to find somebody to play with Matthews. And so there's all these moving parts, but they're all great moving parts to have because they have such promise in front of them. Now you just have to make the right decisions.
I think it's a great point. I mean, on a couple of different levels. One, I think at the very least what you have here is the Leafs can sit back and say, you want to call us, go ahead. But we're not desperate here. You know, we're not going to be the team that has to be so aggressive to go out there and, you know, we need, like what happened was the Taylor Hall for Adam Larson deal spun everyone out of control to the point where, well, that's the only deal that can happen. That's what has to happen. If you want this guy, you've got to give up that guy, and it's that simple. Because it's a copycat league, and that's generally the way people think. And I don't think that will be the case with the Leafs. I think they'll look at Nylander very differently, and all three of their big guys. But to your point about how he approaches the game compared to Hyman, I think this is the evolution of the Canadian hockey fan, where historically we've been the grit and grind, heart. You know, it's all about the heart. We'll go through a wall if we have to. And I think people have evolved, and the way people approach the game has evolved to the point where they realize you don't have to prove that you're a grit grinder by the style of play. You know, there are other ways to prove that you're very effective. And I think Nylander is a perfect example because watching that game on Sunday, he had the puck a lot. And in order to get the puck, you have to go get it. And it can be graceful. And a lot of times it was. And guess what? Matthews is in the same boat. Matthews isn't throwing body checks very rarely. But he takes an angle and uses his stick and his smarts to always get it back. And that's not classic Zach Hyman Canadian, you know, blocking a shot with his face to go get the puck style of play. But it's equally as effective in terms of getting the puck. And once he's got it, they're on a completely different level.
Well, there was a time where, you know, the play where Konechny sold the high stick and he didn't get hit, if that would have been a Swedish player at a certain time, people would have been all over him.
Mm-hmm.
Later in the period, Nylander had the puck, and we didn't have control of the replay, so I couldn't show it, but I wanted to, was Nylander had control of the puck up near the top of the Swedish offensive zone, and he reversed it. And I forget who the Canadian player was, went to lift his stick, and he hit him in the throat just under the chin. And he didn't fall down, he didn't do anything, but he went over and it hurt, and you could tell he was bent over, kind of gliding towards the bench. And so what's happened is over decades, there's been a meshing of how Canada plays the game, how the rest of the world plays the game. We steal from them, they steal from us. And then you end up with a player who's probably a hybrid, and that's a guy like Matthews or a guy to a certain extent like Nylander. Like, they're hybrid players. They have a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Craig's been all over the world, and, you know, tell me if I'm wrong, Craig, but we run into people all over the place that you find out, hey, they love the game just like we do. They just love it a little different. They look at it a little different. Their way's not wrong. Our way's not right. But if you're closed-minded, you fail to see what is right, which is all the stuff that you see in these different countries, and you adapt and you steal. And Babcock talks about it all the time. He goes, when I'm with other coaches, all I'm doing is trying to steal stuff. He says it all the time.
Right.
And Ray, I totally agree with you. I mean, I think it was Mark Twain that said years ago, if you want to eliminate prejudice, travel around the world. And
right.
I think it's to eliminate your hockey prejudices by going and seeing these different. And Ray, again, I can't agree with you any more than what you just said. The fans in these other countries, they're as passionate about hockey as Canadian fans, just in a different way.
Well, wouldn't you say the domestic prejudice, if you can put it that way, has probably hurt some Canadian players in the past, too, because they've been remarkably skilled. If you look at the numbers, very effective, can help you win, but don't play physically, you know, or wouldn't fight that one time. So because he couldn't fight, you know, he's not a true Canadian player. Like, how
right.
often did that happen? Back in the 80s and 90s, I mean, you guys would know a lot better than I would, but where you maybe look at it and you're like, look how good this guy is, but he's got this reputation of being a European type of player. And
well, we'd hear in evaluations all the time about guys, yeah, but he'd never fight. Okay, and now, doesn't that just sound absurd?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so he doesn't fight. So what? Well, how about shoot it in their net?
Right, exactly.
That might count too. So the game has changed and evolved, and I think we saw, you know, from the World Championships, I mean, the rosters are what they are, the teams are what they are, but there's players in that tournament that we don't know anything about, and you watch them and you go, wow, that guy's really good. Like there's a defenseman, I believe he's coming back to the NHL, or coming back to North America, Antipin, number 9, the little Russian defenseman.
Yep.
He's really good. They had a youngster who got tied up with I believe Alex Killorn, an awkward fall, unfortunately, got hurt. Gavrikov, he's really good. Well, how
That's
do we know
Columbus
these guys?
Draft
They're just
pick,
playing
right,
on
right?
the other side of the world. Well, when they show up, we're like, whoa, there's another good player. And so Canada's got plenty of good players. We're going to see the Olympics this year might be really cool to watch for that reason. Mm-hmm. That, wow, these are guys we don't know, and man, they're really good too. I mean, they're not Sidney Crosby, but there's not many Sidney Crosbys around. So I love tournament hockey, so I would be interested in it no matter who's playing. I love this World Championship because as it got down to the nitty-gritty, you started to see some fantastic hockey. And it was just different. Like, I watched the Nashville game last night, and I said to Landon, we were sitting here watching, and I go, wow, is it ever different watching North American hockey from European hockey?
Ray,
just, it's just different.
The
rink's smaller, it's crowded, it's loud, it's, I don't know, it was just all different.
Yeah.
And I found I loved the gold medal game as much as I loved last night's game. And I thought last night's game was amazing in that Nashville had, 11 shots and they had 3 goals.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, man, how are they in this? And then, oh, they got a fourth one. Like, I don't know, just maybe it's their time this year. Maybe, you know, even with the injuries, maybe it's their time. I don't know, but it was pretty cool to watch.
Well, you know, just talking about the World Cup, I turned on the Russia-US-Canada game, the Russia-Canada game, that semifinal game.
Yeah.
And Ray, I couldn't turn it off. I thought that's one of the best games I've seen in over the last number of years. And I mean, you were calling it, but you talk about back and forth and intensity and skill. I was blown away.
Well, I had to tell, we went to a break, and I had said about 6 words in the previous 5 minutes, because there was no whistles and there was no time to jump in. So I said to Gord, you're doing a hell of a job. Keep it up.
No
like,
kidding.
There was no way to get in. The game was too fast. It was really, really a fun tournament to play in, or to watch, rather, and to watch the players excel. Like, we're in the, you know, we're talking about Toronto, and, man, you know, I mean, you watch what Sweden did with Nylander, and it's not like they spotted him around, right? He's on the best line. He's the one of the guys they're relying on to score. It was really, really something to see. And then he just about ended Lundqvist's career
yeah.
when he hit him. That was a I actually was watching, guys, when Lundqvist went down and they piled up there. I'm like, I hope he gets up. Like, he hit him hard.
I was thinking the same thing. Like, he really went at him. Like, it was obviously genuine excitement, but it was like Lawrence Taylor taking out Joe Theismann. Like, he crushed him.
And but then how about their celebration yesterday in Sweden?
That was outstanding.
That's where, again, I think it's really cool for us to see. And that's, you know what? The sport of hockey is, it's a worldwide sport, of course, but to see the passion that some people have for it, those Swedes were so jacked. What an awesome celebration they had.
Well, and that applies in Nashville. You can bank on it after that win last night. They're going to the Cup Final for the first time in franchise history. And yet up here, the whole story is about PK and the Habs and Habs fans reacting and what kind of pressure this is going to put on Bergevin and the ownership. And I'm not sure how to answer that because they haven't won a cup yet, first and foremost. I think if they win a cup, it might elevate it to a different level. But I feel for Shea Weber in all this because Weber, he was there for a decade, and I would argue probably their greatest player in franchise history. He did a lot to build the sport in that market, very unconventional hockey market. And now everyone's just moved on from him, and for obvious reasons, the team is playing so well. But where do you stand on PK, the Habs, and how it affects Mark Bergevin in the future, if it does at all?
Well, the answer is it can't affect Bergevin because he can't be gun-shy to make the next move, whatever it might be. They made a decision. It wasn't just Mark that made a decision. You know, a deal of that magnitude is coming from a lot of different places. You know, everybody's got their thumbs in the deal with their opinion. He's got to make the end call. But it turns into Subban is really good and Weber's no good. And that's not fair and it's not correct. Nashville's not going to the Stanley Cup final because of PK Subban. Montreal's not out of the playoffs because of Shea Weber. But nobody wants to get involved in all of that. It's much easier to try and focus in on something much, much narrower, which is the trade. But I look at Nashville's defense is as good as anybody's. I mean, who's better? And PK is a valuable member of that top four on the blue line. I've been impressed with the way, for the most part, he's tamed down some of the wildness of his game. And last night, it kind of crept in a few times, but there was no damage. Rene made a couple of good stops on a Subban turnover or two, but his boldness was needed in Nashville. His style fits with what Peter Laviolette is trying to do in Nashville. And so, but it can't be just one move. But I get in Montreal, if I were a Canadiens fan, I'd be sour too, especially with a player that's as popular as PK is. You know, but you have to look at this and go, wait a minute. 3 years in a row, David Poile has made a huge deal. Or three of the last 4 years. He got Forsberg, he got Johansson, and now he got Subban. And so for as much as you want to talk about what's Bergevin going to do, well, obviously he's got to go get a forward or three because they got to score eventually. David Poile has been at this a long time, and finally the moves that he made has punched his team to the finals. And that's, I think that's as big of a story as anything. But I get why. I was just on in Montreal, and you can imagine what, like, people aren't even, it's not like they're curious, they're angry.
Right. Well, and to be fair to them, right, they were angry the second the trade happened.
Yes,
this
absolutely.
Isn't something new.
But what player, when we think of it, what player is like PK? Like, that? There isn't any.
No.
No.
Not in our sport. And it's not because of his off-ice stuff. It's not because of his on-ice stuff. It's because of all of it. He's a different guy who embraces something and is something that we're not used to seeing. And in Montreal, they decided it was too much. And from everything that we've heard, that, you know, they felt he was overpowering the team. Now, maybe they couldn't find a way to make that all work, and they make this deal. They didn't get a schlub. They got a terrific, probably Hall of Fame player. Like, that's not the, you know, but Bergevin had to make that move in his head. So now he's got to make the next move to get them to be a better team. And that's why you know, I imagine it's really hard to be a GM. You're getting your teeth kicked in right here, but you're still happy with your player. But the fans don't care. They look at the other player that's gone, and they go, wait a minute, he's now 4 wins away from the Cup. If Nashville wins and PK brings the Cup back to Montreal, what do you think that's going
to
be like?
Oh, and you know he's going to.
Of course
you
he is.
You know he's going to do that.
I would.
Yeah, well, Phil did it to Toronto. I mean, yeah. Phil brought it right back up here. I fully expect that to happen, and I kind of want to see it happen, to be honest. I think it would be kind
of
fun
just
to see the
do.
Reaction.
You know, so they're 4 wins away, and it's going to be – it'll be interesting to see if Pitt gets through. You know, they're so banged up. What are they going to be like? I mean, I'm amazed at what they've been able to do anyway with the number of players they have had out. But if Ottawa comes back and I mean, it's I don't know how anybody could look past Nashville and say, oh, it would be an upset if they win.
No, absolutely not. At the very least, it's 50-50. I don't think there's any denying that. Good to have you back on Canadian soil, buddy, and we'll keep rocking and rolling as we go forward leading up to the draft.
Yeah, look forward to it, boys. Good to have you back. Craig, good to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks, Ray.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay. All right, there he is, Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst.
Yeah, that is tricky coming back. And remember, he's 9 hours different. So
right.
It's even trickier 9 hours.
He's been there for a long time.
It's 11:30. He's been on 11:30. It's 11:30. His body's on 11:30 clock right now.
And he's in Vancouver.
That's correct. What I mean. He's 9 hours. So it's 2:30. And he's trying to figure out a way, how do I stay up at least until 8?
Yeah.
Right? So that he can try to get his rhythms back on. It's not easy.
Here's a hypothetical for you. If Bergevin could go back, and instead of trading Subban for Weber, he traded Subban for Ryan Johansson. You think he'd do that?
Geez, that's a good question. That's a hypothetical. Well, let me put it this way. You get the number one center that David Poile was trying to get, right? So David Poile, but David Poile's not doing that. Because David Poile gave up Seth Jones, and he knew he was giving up a good player. But he said, if I need a number one center, that's what I got to give up. So, you know, yeah, I think that would have that to me is what the team can really benefit from.
I think Bergevin probably would do that.
Yeah, I agree.
He could, because then he's younger. He's your number one center. Yeah. Yeah, you're missing out on the back end, but you got Carey Price to hopefully help out the defense. Sam Mitchell coming up, Richard Griffin from the Toronto Star, Aaron Sanchez on the DL, Bautista starting at third base tonight for the first time since 2013. We'll continue to tee up the big games tonight. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN Go app. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN Go app. For the most part, you can find everything podcasted online. TSN1050.ca and on iTunes, but we've had some technical difficulties the past couple of shows, and I appreciate anybody who's willing to listen to the show at any point, but I always find it humorous when people are tweeting while the show is live asking where the podcast is. Like, someone was sending this tweet in earlier saying, hey, what's up with the podcast, dude? I'm on the GO train. I want to listen. We're live right now. You listen to the show live right now. Why would you podcast the show if you can listen to it live? I mean, unless you've got a routine and you want to listen to the 4 p.m. hour first and then the 5 and then the 6 or whatever. I get it. If it's midnight, we're off the air or whatever. But we're on the air right now.
Technology trips up people.
It really does. Like, I thought of that because what we were saying about Ray and being in Europe and time zones and all that kind of stuff. It's not that complicated. You can listen to the show right now. TSN Go app. Conventional radio. Go old school. Do whatever you got to do.
No, I'm with you.
And hopefully we figure out the podcast issue down the road, but we're on right now.
Yeah.
You can listen right now.
Current. We're talking current.
This is actually live. We are live here in Toronto.
And if you listen to this part and you want to go listen to the podcast from earlier, I mean, it'll save you time. Like, you know, like, it's time that you just use now to listen live and go back and review what we talked about earlier.
It's not that complicated.
No.
It's not that confusing. So Godspeed to all the podcast listeners out there. NBA playoffs continuing tonight. To no one's surprise, Golden State mopped the floor with San Antonio last night, 12-0 going into the NBA Finals. And now their owner's popping off saying he thought the better team lost in the Finals last year, which is always the most ridiculous comment from anybody that loses. The better team didn't win. Yeah, no, they did. That's who won, is the team that was better in the end, because that is the objective of playing the game, is who is going to score more points and actually win.
Yeah, it's funny in that column where it says champions, they don't have another column that says best team.
Right. There's no asterisk.
Yeah, that, like, just in case best team, you know, in case the team that won wasn't the best team.
Yeah, you don't host a parade for the team that was the best team but didn't happen to actually end up winning the game. But
did the owner get a participation ribbon at least? Like, did he get,
I would
was
hope
he,
so.
Was he kind of disappointed about maybe not the kind of how the participation ribbon looked?
I'm sure he filed a complaint with Adam Silver. Saying this is an absolute injustice because the better team didn't win. So now he's popping off saying he wants Cleveland, as if that's some hot take, as if he doesn't know that he's getting Cleveland. You know what I mean? Like, this is the kind of psychology that is totally unnecessary and a complete waste of time. Now, I would have preferred if he came out and said, no, we want Boston, and I think Boston can actually beat Cleveland. Because then I'd be like, all right, let's see how informed you are, how educated you are. That's an interesting take. But saying you want Cleveland when you know you're getting Cleveland,
it's real
falls
simple.
On deaf ears,
like,
for me.
The owner, really what he should be doing is going, hey, when are games 3 and 4? Because they'll be in Cleveland. Oh, okay, how can I plan my schedule around? Where do I want to have dinner? Do
exactly.
I have to make reservations now? Because it's Cleveland.
Cleveland, I think, is going to destroy Boston tonight. Ooh. Full credit to Boston for showing heart in game three and without Isaiah Thomas, and they were down 21 at some point. But it really says all you need to know and all you need to hear. The reaction to that win exemplifies how ludicrous this whole playoff situation has been and how predictable it's been. The fact that the first place team in the East actually won a game on a miracle shot, and it's going to develop into like a Disney movie in the future. Like, who's going to play Marcus Smart and who will play Kelly Olynyk? You know, because I can't believe the fact that we are building this up into the miracle that it was. Well, speaks to the greatness of Cleveland and the predictability of what's going to happen tonight and the rest of the series.
Well, you talk about the shot. I mean, it goes up there, kind of bounces up, bounces around, hits the rim, and falls in, right? I mean, that shot could be taken another 50 times, and it's going to fall different every time.
Mm-hmm.
But then I'm listening to the broadcaster. Well, this is sure an example of Celtic pride. Celtic pride? Are you kidding me? Like now we're invoking it. I mean, it's as dumb as Guy Boucher talking about the Penguins being the best team on the planet and everybody knows it.
Exactly.
Like, you know, Celtic pride, what does this have to do with it? It has
ridiculous.
Nothing to do with it.
The only way I actually take this playoff series seriously is if Boston runs off the next two and they're up 3-2. That's it. That's the only time I might actually pay attention, and then it will be interesting for me because I'll be curious to see how LeBron and the Cavs are going to win Game 6 and Game 7. But and tonight then, it will be a massacre.
Well, I mean,
for LeBron
and Isaiah Thomas is done. Mm-hmm. Like, so, I mean, hey, listen, it was a nice win. Like, the Celtics,
good for probably, them.
Yeah, good for them, and it'll be over in five.
They did what the Raptors couldn't do. Yeah, exactly. You get an extra home game. The owner should be ecstatic. They did what the Raptors couldn't do. They did what Indiana couldn't do. But I think LeBron, 11 points, 9 in the fourth quarter. He came out. He was very. He understood what he played horribly.
He had a bad day.
He had an awful night. But it's not going to happen again.
I agree with you.
I think it'll be a massacre tonight.
Everything worked for the Celtics, but I love that. The other thing, just back to this whole Celtics pride, they evoked it, all the ghosts, and Red Auerbach came down and anointed them all, patted them on the head. It's the other thing they haven't won a game here since November 17th, 1998. Like, 1998, like, who cares? Like, it's a different team.
It's
like,
a totally different team.
Like, they're wearing the same sweaters and uniforms, but there's nothing. This team hasn't lost since 1998. Let's just look at what they did this year or their last game and be done with it. But,
exactly.
The narratives. It was like the narrative today. And I heard it in a bunch of places, too, like about P.K. Subban. Like, you know, we got to start reliving the trade. Like, you know what? Ray made a great point about Shea Weber. You know, he's a really, really good player. And Mark Bergevin felt that this is the one they had to make, right? And, you know, like, hey, listen, you know, trades get made for a lot of different reasons. David Poile had a reason for making it. Mark Bergevin had a reason for making it. And I would suggest, we know that David's happy, but I would suggest that going forward, and to Ray's point, I think it's a really good point. This is now one step of what we were looking to do. Now he can't be shy about his next steps.
Well, and that's the beauty of sports. And how fickle fans can be, they're all over Bergevin right now. But in a month at the draft, if he makes a blockbuster deal that they feel goes their way, they're going to love what he's doing. Or at least in the moment, they're going to love what he just did. And vice versa. I mean, if he goes through the draft and free agency and he doesn't make any bold moves or doesn't do anything significant to bolster that lineup, he's going to get ridiculed. So you're never away from the target. I mean, you're always the target. You're always in a position where you're going to be criticized or reviewed or evaluated. And I think Bergevin understands that.
Oh, sure he does.
He gets it.
Yeah, he does.
So, you know, the Habs are going to be an interesting team over the next month and a half. Who they sign, who they bring back, what they do with Galchenyuk, how much money they pay Carey Price, how they acquire a first-line center, if it's possible.
You know, or even just some more offense.
Or more
right?
offense in general.
Whatever, like Ray said, one or three players. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's a lot that they have to do in Montreal, so they're going to be a focal point of the NHL. But guess what? Whoever wins the Stanley Cup will also be looking to improve themselves.
Well, and I'll say this, too, and I'm not saying this. People forget that last year, the Nashville Predators went to Game 7 in the second round of the playoffs versus the San Jose Sharks. Now, Game 7 was not a pretty one for Shea Weber or for the Nashville Predators. But this was a team last year that went in and beat Nashville or beat Anaheim, and then Game 7 against San Jose Sharks. So with Shea Weber, they were a good team.
Right, exactly.
And there's no saying that they couldn't have done the same thing this year. And there's no saying that if PK was in Montreal that they were going to the Stanley Cup Finals. So separate the two players. And one doesn't mean that you're going to be in the Stanley Cup Final, and one doesn't mean you weren't going to be there.
Exactly. And this is not like the NBA where one superstar really can have that kind of an effect. PK's played really well. Weber had a great season. They both factored into their team, and I agree. I think if the trade didn't happen, there's a good chance Nashville's still in the Cup Final, waiting to see who plays them.
Yeah.
I think there's still a really good chance. Weber's a great player.
Yeah,
they play a different style, but they're both great players. Richard Griffin will join us in about 20 minutes. Looking back on what happened over the weekend, Aaron Sanchez back to the DL for the third time already this season, and Jose Bautista starting at third base. And Sam Mitchell will join us in about 45 minutes to tee up Cleveland-Boston tonight. What kind of game do we expect out of LeBron? As I've been saying, I think he's going to go off. I fully expect him to go legend tonight and get his take on what happened in that San Antonio-Golden State series as well. Craig Button's in here. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050. Richard Griffin from the Toronto Star will join us. The Jays are in Milwaukee. Milwaukee atop the NL Central. How many non-diehards would even know that piece of trivia? I mean, they've been off to a pretty good start, but really the Cubs just haven't taken off the way people thought they would. Aaron Sanchez back in the DL for the third time this year. Jose Bautista starting at third base. We'll touch on all of that with Griff in about 10 minutes. Sam Mitchell coming up as well. Dog days of the NFL, Craig, because the NFL softening their stance on TD celebrations is like a massive story. And this is the beauty of the NFL, though. They just give you something every couple of weeks to make sure that ESPN and FS1 chew on it for like days on end. I think this is probably a good move. The No Fun League acronym was not something they were happy about or proud of necessarily, but loosen up. Let people celebrate. That's what people go to watch. Entertainers.
So we're all the guys now. So where's OBJ and everybody there that's going to score touchdowns? Why are they not on Instagram showing us what celebrations they're working on now? Like, you know,
give us a tease.
Yeah, why don't we got to see that.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. Because they can do – there's still a limit, and the problem is the limit is still subjective. So refs can still throw unsportsmanlike flags, and you know that's going to cause a stir.
But they said they can use the ball as a prop.
They can use it as a prop. The whole team can be involved. They can do snow angels. But if you use it as a weapon or something, then it's 15 yards and potentially a fine.
Yeah, no gestures or anything
like
that.
But you know something's going to happen that will be open to interpretation.
Okay, now do you think that the day is going to come when an NFL team or maybe the receiving corps will hire their own TD celebration choreographer?
I would love to see that happen.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
They got enough money and they got enough time. They got the longest offseason in sports. Let's do it. Richard Griffin, Sam Mitchell coming up. We'll get back into the NHL playoffs as well. Final hour up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.